The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Good afternoon. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. It is Saturday, July 25th, and we are recording the show to air on Monday, July 27th, and perhaps that's an important distinction given just how quickly the news cycle pivots during these challenging times. For those of us first joining me, if it's your first time listening, my name is David Leach, and I serve as the Superintendent of Schools in the Warwick Valley Central School District. And today's extended program will address reopening our schools. Joining me today is Megan McGordy, the Director of Elementary Education and Pupil Personnel Services. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Dr. Leach.
Thanks for being here, Megan. Megan and I were on our way in to record, and Taylor, the manager here, made her first mistake in the history of her role here at WTBQ, and that is she told us the wrong time to come. So we ran in here, but we are flexible and we are responsive, just like our teachers are. So I think we'll be okay. So, you know, around the world, safely reopening schools remains one of the most daunting challenges for us all, to restarting our national economies and educating our children, to childcare. And while approaches have been different, no country has tried to reopen schools with the coronavirus infection rates at the levels where they are in our country. Now, fortunately, in New York State, and especially in our region, currently the infection rates are amongst the lowest in the nations. That's good news, and that's given us the charge to move forward with some planning. Now, when I say our region, I'm referring to the Mid-Hudson region, which spans the counties of Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester. The 7-day rolling average infection rate in our region has been about 1%. So that's the good news. So with that said, today we'll provide our listeners with an update regarding the Warwick Valley Central School District's plans to reopen, hoping to provide our community and our families with an overview of the reopening schools process, discuss some of the risks and rewards of the plan to reopen schools this fall, and the actions and strategies that we're looking to implement to mitigate the potential health risks. So, you know, why I have your attention, I ask that our listeners spread the word about this program. So if you're listening right now, as you know, not everyone can tune in during the weekly scheduled broadcast time. So typically the show is at 5 minutes after 12 on Mondays, and during the year, during the school year, I'll often have students on, and we'll be showcasing academic programs, that kind of thing. So we are on every Monday at 5 minutes after 12. But if you know folks who can't listen, and you think the information is worthwhile for them, well, we're going to record it, and we're going to post it on our school website as well as on Facebook, like we did last week. So, you know, looking at it from, you know, 30,000 feet up for a minute, you know, where does the United States officially stand on reopening schools this fall? The Trump administration has been, you know, saying throughout the past few weeks that it wants schools open. Vice President Pence and a string of administration officials continue to convey that it's absolutely essential to get our kids back to school, rather. Get them in the classroom, get them as much in-person learning as possible. The Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, has added, and this is a quote from her, "Ultimately, it's not a matter of if schools should reopen, it's simply a matter of how. They must fully open and they must be fully operational, and how that happens is best left to education and to community members." However, and I think very few of us would argue that it's important to get our children back to school. And we recognize that as school district superintendents and administrators and teachers and all stakeholders and parents, we want our kids back in school. However, few variables, many variables to think about. So ultimately, in our state, the person with the authority to reopen our schools is the governor, Governor Cuomo. He's provided a slightly different perspective than the president. In his words, and I'll read you a quote from the paper, a newspaper I have here, everybody wants to reopen schools, but you only reopen if it's safe to reopen. And that's determined by data. You don't hold your finger up and feel the wind. You don't have an inspiration. You don't have a dream. You don't have an emotion. Look at the data. And then Cuomo goes on to say, we test more and we have more data than any state. If you have the virus under control, reopen. If you don't have the virus under control, you can't reopen. We're not going to use our children as a litmus test, and we're not going to put our children in a place where their health is endangered. It's that simple. Common sense and intelligence can still determine what we do, even in this crazy environment. We're not going to use our children as guinea pigs. What I say to the experts is very simple. I'm making the determination as to whether or not I would send my daughter to school. If it's safe, I'll send her. If it's not safe, I'm not going to send her. And you can determine that by science. So that was a quote by Governor Cuomo. And again, you know, just a reminder to our listeners, the governor has the authority to reopen schools, and he issues executive orders that we must follow. So obviously that's an important voice. Governor Cuomo also last week or so, I believe last week, announced a new data-driven guidance for reopening schools in New York State. So schools in a region can reopen if that region is in phase four here in New York of the reopening, and if its daily infection rate remains below 5% or lower, using a 14-day average since unpause was lifted. So schools will close if that regional infection rate, which I just gave you an example of who's in our region, how broad it is, rises above 9% using a 7-day average, so after August 1st. So New York State will make the formula determination during the week of August 1st to August 7th. If I had to guess, we'll probably hear probably closer to August 7th than August 1st, but nevertheless, New York State, the Reimagine Education Advisory Council, and the Department of Health, they've released guidance, and we're busy looking at that guidance and those guiding principles for reopening schools back in the district. So that gives a general overview of, you know, what we're looking at in terms of, you know, school districts and school districts reopening. Now, we, along with the other 700-plus school districts in New York State, are required to submit reopening plans to the New York State Education Department by the end of July, by July 31st, I believe. So that we're working on in the district for the last week or so, and probably the last few months, actually, but formally the last week, actually running the plan. And throughout this broadcast, we're going to share with our listeners what our preliminary plans look like. While not finished, we can certainly share some overarching principles. And from sharing the process to what teams we have, et cetera, in place. So that's important. Last week, we did share with our listeners, and we did post on our website some steps that we're going to take this fall that we've already made decisions about. And when we return from the break, we'll dig a little bit deeper into actually what those plans look like. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools.
You have big dreams, big ideas, big kids. Wait, when did they get so big? You have big plans, big things to do, so we built you a bigger Subaru. Subaru listened and delivered the perfect SUV to accommodate everyone and everything in the new three-row 2020 Subaru Ascent. The Subaru brand was awarded the 2019 KBB 5-Year Cost to Own Award. With an EPA estimated highway fuel economy of 27 miles per gallon for 2020 Subaru Ascent and Ascent Premium models with standard equipment. Actual mileage may vary. Visit WayneSubaru.com for a test drive.
Make any special occasion the memory of a lifetime with music to remember. From Sinatra to Rihanna, choose a local and award-winning DJ DJs from Music Magic. They're experts at driving creative party ideas and games that shape a great time. They even do magic and comedy for every occasion. Give them a call at 845-986-5602 or text them at 914-393-7758. Music Magic is fully insured and provides local references, so give them a call today.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs.
800-817-2939. 800-817-2939.
Tune in every Saturday at 11 a.m. for Free Speech with Stephen Kattar and Jay Westerveld, where you can voice your opinion, express your ideas, comment, or make suggestions on the topic du jour, right here on Radio Worth Listening to.
WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. And today, I am joined by Megan McGordy, who's a director of elementary education and pupil personnel services in the district. Thanks again for being here, Megan.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about the topic that everyone seems to be talking about lately on the news and in communities, and whether it's the ball field or on Facebook, and that is the reopening of schools. If you're just joining us, I just provided a general overview of how that decision will be determined by the governor, what metrics he'll use, which will be an average of the infection rate for the region, and he will be announcing in early August exactly what it's going to look like. The just to share, as I started the broadcast off talking about the direction we're receiving from the federal government, and perhaps a slightly different perspective or very different perspective from our governor and more local government or states. And in my opinion, there's a good reason why our elected leaders are at conflict with their views. And, I'll use what science as of today is telling us about the reopening, but science from two different perspectives. One, what's the science on why children should be back in school? And I think we all know there's what that means and how important it is. And then secondly, there's certainly science on whether and how students should get back to school. Reflecting for a minute on the importance of school, you think about the areas that we're looking at, Megan, with reopening. Maybe you could familiarize our listeners with a little bit about our process, and then specifically, what assurances, what areas do we have to develop this plan on? And I think that speaks to a lot about the science about getting kids back in school, the importance of school.
No, absolutely. So hopefully, if you're in the community, you're a little bit familiar with our reopening task force, which has met over a series of weeks. It's made up of school district officials as well as local health officials, parents, community members, and then that larger group has really been working together to come up with areas that the state needs us to take a really hard look at. So we've broken it down into different assurances that we're going to make. So the areas are communications, how the messages are going to be communicated to the community, health and safety. So as you can imagine, there's a considerable amount of attention that needs to be paid to the health and safety of our students, our staff, our faculty. Facilities is another area that we're looking into, whether it be utilizing buildings, different spaces. Nutrition, so that takes into consideration not only students that are in school, but students that are not in school. Transportation. And that's an area that I know a lot of folks are questioning and concerned about, so we're paying very special attention to the transportation area. The social-emotional well-being, and I think that speaks to a little bit of what you were saying, is one of the reasons we really do want to welcome students back to school is that, school is a social experience for students, and it provides often much-needed social and emotional support for students. the school scheduling process. So obviously taking a look at, based on the levels of students, grade levels, what their school schedule will be. Budget and fiscal is another area that the state has asked us to take a look at. Attendance, technology. So, you know, we did a little bit of work with this in the spring when we had to go to a remote plan, but now our technology plan has really had to take a look at not only having students home, but also having them in person. So we've had to expand some of our work in that area. Teaching and learning, which is what we're truly in the business of. So we're spending considerable time looking at the educational program we're going to offer to students. Special education, the state has really charged school districts with taking a look and making assurances for those students with disabilities who are often in the group who are the least successful with remote learning. And then finally, our bilingual and world education category.
Yeah, certainly a lot to consider. And, you know, if you think about traditional education in the industrial age, you know, it emphasized what? Conformity, consistency, predictability related to core academic outcomes, basic student proficiencies, you know, preparing students for the 20th century. But in contrast today, you know, we're asked to do much more. We're asked to emphasize a holistic approach to teaching, to learning, to assessment. We're asked to monitor and support student health, their well-being, their mental health, their interpersonal and their social interaction, how they're collaborating with others, their leadership, efficacy, academic progress. It's, you know, that coupled with what Megan was just sharing with the assurances we have to provide the state, ranging from health and safety and facilities and nutrition to, you know, special education, which I having Megan here today, we'll certainly dig into that topic as well later. It's a lot to consider in this plan. And, you know, for listeners that are, you know, just reflecting back in the spring where we felt like we were sort of building the airplane in flight, so to speak, we still did provide, you know, meals daily to children and still did provide social and emotional support on a case-by-case basis. And when we look to implement this plan moving into this school year from a budget and fiscal end, which Megan mentioned was part of the process, it will certainly be a strain on us, but we do have reserves and funds ready for this purpose. You know, we often talk about any organization, and particularly schools, having a rainy day fund, or want to call it reserves, and, well, it's a rainy day. So if you're home and you're saying, gee, this is going to cost a lot of money to do what we're going to share over the course of this broadcast, it absolutely is, no doubt about it. We saved significant money being closed a few months at the end of last year from mid-March till June. And that savings, coupled with reserves, will be able to, we think, with confidence, meet our students' needs during these difficult times, but stay within any tax cap increase. We're not going to propose any budget that would pierce a tax cap, or we have been below that increase all my years here since 2013 and before then, and we will continue to be. So we don't have a choice there. We recognize that. So, you know, as I was saying, you know, you have sort of these two types of science here. You know, you've got why kids got to be back in school. We just went over many of those, and I think that's sort of common sense. But then there's the science of whether and how students should get back to school. And, you know, it's so important, particularly for younger children, to have that in-person educational experience. And it's important to all students, but particularly the young students. And, you know, they need to be able to interact with their peers and have that face-to-face communication with teachers. And unfortunately, a legacy, a short-term legacy of this pandemic so far has been that online learning for students around the country is not as effective as in person. And I think any educator would argue with you on that, perhaps as being dishonest. I mean, I think we all know that, with very few exceptions, that the success of that distance learning is just not what it is to be in person. So with that said, we've got to enhance that plan, because any plan that we submit to the state and any plan we share with our community, we're going to certainly remind folks that there may be a time during the year that we are going to have to pivot like we did last spring. I hope not. I hope the infection rate stays low. I hope there's not a second wave. I hope there is a vaccine coming in the near future. I hope we can stay not only open and in a bridge sense or in a hybrid sense, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but maybe even relax those requirements as the year moves on. But for now, we've got a plan for all various scenarios and uncertainties. So, schools provide critical services that help our students meet their needs and their families, and especially, of course, anyone who's disadvantaged through supporting, you know, the developmental, social and emotional areas, creating a safe environment for learning, identifying and addressing any nutritional needs, any neglect or abuse, unfortunately, at times, physical activity. So school closure disrupts the delivery of that in-person instruction, obviously, when the brick and mortar is closed down. And those critical services to children and families become more challenging to provide. So that's the first type of science. When we return from the, actually, let's go a little bit longer here. The set of science on whether schools should reopen, you know, looks at the virus itself and how that virus spreads and who it can spread to. And there are really three areas that we can be, while not certain, and I feel like every time, Megan, I turn on one of the news stations, there's a new piece of research out or data, or I thought I was supposed to do this and now I should be doing that. So I don't claim to be a medical doctor or a researcher, but I think, while not certain, we're pretty confident about the following. Children, particularly younger children, do not seem to be getting sick with the coronavirus at anywhere near the same rate as adults.
Mm-hmm.
When children do get sick, they're much less likely to get seriously ill. The data seems to show about 2% of children who are getting infected are actually getting very sick. So while still a risk, and 2% of a lot is a lot, you know, so it's still a risk, in my opinion, that is a good sign. Many experts are reporting that there's growing evidence that the younger children, say children 10 and younger, 9 and younger, are also less likely to spread the virus than older children. There was a study, and again, there's not many studies, and I'm sure you could poke holes in what we have, but what we have is what we have, at least, right? There was a study that was done in France in a community where two teachers in the high school got very sick while school was still in session back in February, and then the researchers went and tested the students and teachers and the staff at the high school for antibodies to the coronavirus to indicate whether they had been infected. And what they found was about 40% of the students and teachers had been infected at that level, which I think we'd all say, wow, that's a pretty high rate. Then when they went to their neighboring, their district elementary schools, it was about a half dozen in the community, and they did the same kind of testing, there were much, much lower rates. They found about 9% of students, 7% of teachers came back with the positive with antibodies. So they didn't find any evidence that the students who were infected actually infected other people. So it suggests, researchers think, that the based on that and similar types of studies, maybe more anecdotal, I admit, but that the younger children are less likely to spread the virus to other people, which would seem to mean that although we need to be careful not to rely too much on one study, and we need to learn more about the virus, and we need to have safeguards in place and give a lot of consideration, again, to minimizing the risk, that this could be good news, or at least significant news. It's similar what they're finding in childcare considerations. You know, if you go back to the childcare facilities that were open during the last outbreak in New York, you could see that the rates of infection were not at the same levels for that group of students. Again, more anecdotal, but promising information nonetheless. So when we return, we'll start to talk more about the specific plan that we're looking at in Warwick and what some of the reasoning is that aligns with some information I just shared and some ideas we have. So stay tuned. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools.
the age of 22, just 3 years after starting Millsbaugh Furniture, the American Civil War began. My great-great-great-grandfather, T.L. Millsbaugh, had to figure out how to make this new business survive. The Spanish flu pandemic hit when my great-great-grandfather was at the helm. A century ago, my great-grandfather faced doing business during the Great Depression and then World War II while his son was serving the U.S. Navy overseas on the Bushnell. In recent history, my father brought us through the housing recession in 2008. Now, just a few months after officially signing documents to be the next generation of Millsbaughs to own and operate Millsbaugh Furniture, I know that we will come through this as well. Just like those before me, I will rely on the same philosophies as my ancestors to provide you with exceptional customer service and beautiful, non-disposable furniture and mattresses. If you have recently found the comfort and support of your furniture and mattresses in need of improvement, let my furniture counselors show you what makes our products the best value for you while helping to make your best buying decisions. Sturdy, elegant, comfortable, timeless. That's Millsbaugh Furniture since 1858.
Sam's Meat has been supplying restaurants and shops with the highest quality local and sustainably sourced prime and choice wholesale meat, steaks, poultry, seafood, and much more for over 20 years. Whether you're a small family butcher shop or a busy steakhouse, expect A1 service and the finest products available. Call Sam's at 845-651-MEAT or visit the store right off Route 17A in Florida, New York for the highest quality products at unbeatable prices.
At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-838-9744.
You're just trying to be better. We're just trying to help. The John Tesh Radio Show.
Monday through Saturday starting at 3 p.m.
Tesh.com.
After a long day, we're here to keep you company with great soft rock and interesting information you can use. Radio worth listening to.
WTBQ.
Mostly sunny skies for this afternoon. Very hot, highs in the mid-90s, but feeling like the upper 90s. For tonight, partly cloudy and warm with an isolated shower not ruled out, low around 75. Tuesday, clouds and perhaps a stray shower in the morning, then a few more scattered showers and storms threaten throughout the afternoon, highs around 90. And those showers and storms do quickly dissipate Tuesday evening with a low of 65 to 70. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm WeatherWorks meteorologist Michael Prianti.
The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation.
WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you're listening to Your Schools. Weekly, I have a program, if this is your first time listening, where we discuss what's happening here in the Warwick Valley Central School District. Although recently, a lot of our discussions really have been focusing on matters that can pertain to any school district, and that do, actually, with the reopening of schools. Megan McGordy, the Director of Elementary Education and People Personnel Services, is here. First part of this broadcast, I've been focusing more broader stroke, what some of the research says about reopening school. We have a plan to submit at the end of July. We have to refer to a state guidance document, ultimately, and the CDC guidelines. Ultimately, Governor Cuomo is going to make the decision whether our schools reopen. That's not a decision that can be made locally by a board of education or a superintendent outside of the parameters that are set up by the governor. He's going to use infection rates. I share what that means. He's going to look at it regionally, not just the whole state. We went over what composes our region, what counties. So Megan, we've, last week we were, I think, the first district in our region and one of the first in the state, really, to of a district our size at least, start talking about with the public what this potentially this plan is going to look like. And while we knew that was going to be incomplete information, the big piece was we wanted to share with folks that at least to open the 2020-21 school year, school is going to look different, and we wanted to get that word out, which certainly sparked a lot of discussion, emotion, phone calls, Facebook postings, and, you know, as you would imagine, which is normal, which is the times we live in, because we talked about a hybrid model where students would come to school. A lot of students would come to school every other day. But why don't you go over what we have announced thus far? What are the broad strokes that we're looking at that'd be helpful for our community to know about? It may be a repeat for many listeners, although there may be some new information as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, your point is should be underscored is that school is going to look a little differently in the fall. And just wrapping your head around that as a parent and as a family, I think is important. So I was, you know, proud of us for going out with the information so that we can begin as a community to kind of digest this. So although plans aren't finalized, and as we've repeatedly said, the governor ultimately has the power to keep schools open or to close them, we're looking at a hybrid model in which our youngest learners, so our kindergartners and first graders, would attend school in person each day, and their class sizes would be approximately half the typical size. So it'll really depend on how many students we're welcoming in, how many families are going to participate in that in-person instruction. But you're looking at those kindergarten and first grade classes being half the size, but being full days. The hybrid component comes in for students in grades 2 through 12, and they will attend in-person school an average of every other day. So most weeks it'll be 2 days, and then the other week it'll be 3 days, and the pattern will continue. So although I can understand the difficulty behind that, there is a pattern to it, and it does repeat on a biweekly basis. And when those students come in-person instruction, their classes will also be about half the size. On the days that students aren't physically in school, we've really been working behind the scenes on creating a more robust distance learning plan for students. So what does that look like? That looks like, you know, more opportunity for students to meet in small groups with the teacher, you know, less responsibility on the parents, more given to the students. And again, it's going to look and feel a little bit differently, but you know, we're working very hard to continue to push curriculum and engagement forward because we feel like that is certainly essential for our students.
Now Megan, particularly at the secondary level, we're certainly looking at more live instruction on those days where a student isn't in school.
Absolutely. And you know, we've created, and we talked a little bit about the task force before, one of those subgroups is the distance learning teams. So there's both an elementary and a secondary team. And that was, you know, one of our non-negotiables or boundary conditions. And teachers felt strongly, I know parents felt strongly about that, that more live instruction was what needed to happen. And just so that families know, when we're proposing the hybrid model, there is going to be a complete remote learning plan for students. So if there are families who are in a position where they do not want to send their students to school, they will have the opportunity and ability to enroll in a remote learning option. And again, that plan would include more live instruction and would follow more of a typical schedule. So I think what we've said is, you know, in the spring, we were almost in that kind of crisis teaching. And now in the fall, we've had the opportunity to spend our time planning and revamping and have really recommitted to having these be robust experiences for kids.
Now, when the hybrid model, what about siblings? So I have a child at fourth grade, and I have a child in ninth grade, and this is, how do I keep track of this and childcare? Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And I think those are the real genuine questions where when you're looking at half attending, you're going to cohort students by alphabet, by, you know, those groupings. So you're going to have families whose students are all attending on the same days. So that should help a little bit with, you know, my third grader and my ninth grader on the same hybrid schedule.
Right.
The other thing we're really talking about is giving, and we had mentioned it earlier, special consideration to our special education population. So as you referenced before, distance learning was a struggle for a typical student, and special education students in particular often meet with challenges. So as we're developing schedules, we're looking towards having our special education students attend most frequently in person.
Absolutely. So I think it's important, you know, fair isn't always equal. Is that what they say, Megan? Or, you know, so there, we will, this plan will definitely be differentiated to a degree, and we will give more, be providing more information there in the near future. You know, a few things to keep in mind. So what are some common questions we've received so far? Well, that one is about the family. So you'll be coming to, we'll make sure that family members, that brothers and sisters, will come in on the same days if they're part of the hybrid model. That's important, regardless of what model they're on. If a family has different last names in the household, we're working that out as well. So mm-hmm. we make sure that we cover that. We talked about a remote learning option. You know, it's interesting. You know, there's going to be different models that are going to be announced throughout the state. I think the most popular one will be the hybrid. I was told yesterday that we've had three districts in Orange County share their plans so far. Four now, actually. So Warwick more or less shared our plan back on July 20th. We're recording Saturday, July 25th, this will be broadcast Monday, July 27th. Yesterday, July 24th, three districts announced their plans. I think Middletown, Newburgh, and Cornwall, excuse me, in our region, Newburgh and Middletown announced they're going to start the year remotely, distance learning. And Cornwall announced a hybrid model with many similarities to Warwick's. I believe they were going to be, the students would not attend school at all on Monday, and then they would do their hybrid model Tuesday through Friday, not to imply they won't be doing learning on that Monday when they're not in school, but that was their plan. And I don't think they had a distance learning option with theirs. So we're trying with this model. We've got a percentage of students that are saying, hey, families, we'd be more comfortable learning remotely. We're trying to provide that. Mm-hmm. We recognize our youngest children need, as we've been saying throughout the broadcast, need to be in school. Particularly, distance learning doesn't work as well for them. There's less of a chance of them becoming infected or getting sick seriously from what we're seeing and transmitting it. There's a really host of reasons. So our kindergartners, we're hoping, our plan right now is they come in full day. Yes, we're reopening Pine Island Elementary School as a satellite school. And folks, please don't assume that means that we go up there and paint a couple classrooms and unlock the doors. It is a significant task to get that building ready. We have tenants in the building now that we're helping, and they're working hard to leave the building. They're very cooperative. And we've got to get it prepared, get it inspected, and get it back online, being a school that's been off for about a decade. So it's a big job. We're going to be successful. We're working hard up there. A few folks have reached out to me and said, gee, that's going to be a far drive for me. And mm-hmm. I get that. We understand that. But the alternative is no kindergarten or half-day kindergarten. So we're really trying. That opens up space in the elementary buildings for first grade, because our kindergarten classes will be over at Pine Island Satellite School. And we're looking. We're going to see if we can do more than that. No promises. We don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. But we're looking closely and seeing if we can do more. So we'll have, this is what we can tell you is the plan as of today. We appreciate folks' patience with us. I think, as we look at the guidance, and of course, I've talked a lot about the children, because that's always our primary focus, keep our eye on the prize, and that's our kids. But of course, we've got over 400 employees interact with the children, and they're not under the age of 9, obviously. So that presents some challenges, and we have to have a safe environment for our teachers, mm-hmm. for our instructional aides, for our custodians, for our kitchen workers, for our building and grounds, for our administrators, et cetera, et cetera. So when we return from the break, we'll continue to talk about what measures we are looking to put in a place to mitigate the risk of the coronavirus. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools.
Orange County Tourism invites you to once again savor great dining at your favorite restaurant or go shopping at your favorite local store. We can all continue to move forward and enjoy our freedom by simply always wearing a mask. Restaurants are now offering indoor and outdoor seating, so take advantage of the beautiful summer weather and make reservations. This is such a great time for you and the family to take advantage of the great outdoors and all the scenic Orange County parks and trails. Go for a hike in the woods, paddle on the waterway, enjoy Greenwood Lake, or ride or walk the Heritage Trail. Join in all the activities that the county has to offer. Just remember to be aware of social distancing and stay safe. Shop local and you'll be supporting your local merchants and getting your retail therapy fix at the same time. Enjoy Thomas Bull Memorial Park, walk around the Monroe Pond, visit Warwick, Goshen, Middletown, Pinebush, Newburgh, Washingtonville, and all of our amazing towns and villages. For all the restaurants, shops, and activities in Orange County, visit orangetourism.org.
Sam's Meat has been supplying restaurants and shops with the highest quality local and sustainably sourced prime and choice wholesale meat, steaks, poultry, seafood, and much more for over 20 years. Whether you're a small family butcher shop or a busy steakhouse, expect A1 service and the finest products available. Call Sam's at 845-651-MEAT or visit the store right off Route 17A in Florida, New York for the highest quality products at unbeatable prices.
The Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan connects people who care with causes that matter. The Community Foundation facilitates and manages endowment funds that grow and benefit our communities. The Community Foundation supports numerous organizations while building an endowment that serves as a continual source of community capital. The Community Foundation connects people who care with causes that matter, and they serve people of all means. To make a difference, visit cfosny.org.
This is Jeff Berkman, and I invite you to tune in to the Wednesday Morning Roundtable on Radio Worth Listening To, New Jersey and Orange Free Radio. Free to express your opinions every Wednesday at 10 a.m.
WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. Thank you for tuning in. If you are listening on WTBQ right now, be sure to let your friends, neighbors know that we will put this broadcast on our website as well as on Facebook, so that we can provide you with as much information as possible. You know, it's a little tricky while you're in the middle of putting a plan together to get information out. And, you know, we started July 20th letting folks know about the hybrid model and what potential implications that could have for childcare and scheduling. Right before the break, we went over the last commercial break. We went over exactly what that means. So again, making sure that children, so the hybrid model, what does that mean? It means smaller pods of students. So think of it this way. If I were to visit a kindergarten classroom in the first week of, second week or third week of September, and I'm not going to see 22 students in that room. I'm going to see probably 10, mm-hmm. Probably 12 at the most. We'll see. The next day it'll be a different, group of students that'll be there. Let me repeat that. For kindergarten, it wouldn't be, right? So for kindergarten, I'm going to visit a room. So Mrs. Smith will be the teacher. I'll look in the room. I'll see 10 kindergartners with her across the hall, be her the other half of her class. Maybe there's another 9 in there. And there's a different person in there, an instructional aide, another adult working with the students, and that teacher will flex back and forth working with another adult.
Right. So I think it's important to think about the school building as a whole. So there's a lot of different, you know, other than classroom teachers, which are obviously the drivers, but there's guidance counselors, there's encore teachers. So there's a lot of ways that students can still have really enriching, engaging experiences when you're looking at this splitting the class model in K-1 especially.
Absolutely. So that's an important part of our strategy. You know, folks will say to me, a few folks have said, gee, why don't you just open up school? Kids got to get back to school. Well, you know, we can't have 700 elementary students or more up at Sanferville, 500 or more at Park Avenue, 1,100 at the middle school, 1,300 plus at the high school. If we don't have a hybrid model, we cannot begin to physical distance. It impacts the school bus. It impacts the classroom space. It potentially puts everyone's health at risk. It probably would not be approved by New York State, even if we authored a plan like that. And we have to provide these assurances that we went over prior to the break, the last break. And that's what we're working hard to do. So the hybrid model, students, what does it do? Students and staff are grouped and they remain in the same room as much as possible. So at the elementary level, I think you can imagine what that looks like. What are the benefits of that? Well, the child's with fewer students. If there ever is an incident or when there is an incident of someone testing positive, well, we've, lessened the contact group that the mm-hmm. children are with, right? So they're not with 24 students or 20, they're with maybe 10 or 9. They're not with maybe as many adults, so there's less adults at risk. If you take it to the secondary environment and go up to the high school, we're looking at a different model there as well. We're looking likely at, instead of having the typical high school schedule where there's 7 or 8 periods, or for us in the past, so there's been 6 periods that have met a day for longer periods of time with the unit lunch. Now we're looking to make the period fewer periods a day. I think they're looking at 4 right now, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. They're looking at the students probably eating lunch in a small cohort, maybe with that second class they had, not in a large cafeteria right now. So those are the kind of changes that we're looking at making, because we're trying to have students and staff grouped and remain in the same room as much as possible. Students and staff observing standard physical social distancing throughout the day as much as possible, reducing the capacity for students on the school buses as much as we can. And we'll be coming out, with a transportation plan in the near future. And we'll, typically every year I get on the radio here and I beg people, hey, use the universal busing. I've got to have a certain number of buses available in an emergency and seats and et cetera. If hundreds of folks drop their child off every day, it doesn't make, I understand the reasons why, but doesn't always make the most sense, or at least you scratch your head sometimes when there's bus lines. Well, now with drop-off lines with cars. Well, now we're probably going to give you the opposite message. We're probably going to say, hey, listen, if there's a decent percentage of folks that can transport their child to school, we may say thank you to that, so we can further physical distance on the bus, and we'll come up with plans to try to deal with the congestion out in front of the schools. The plan emphasizes grouping students by the same class group of students and teacher, this cohort, this pod model, so each team functions independently as much as possible. We understand placing students in cohort is strongly encouraged by all the guidelines that we're reading, and where feasible in grades 9 to 12. So those are important to keep in mind. We'll be asking parents to check children's temperature before they come to school. We'll be installing the technology so we can check it as well. We're looking at devices now where we can check up to 60, 70 students a minute. That's not going to be the first line of defense. We are going to ask parents to check their children's temperature and to log into a site and to record and tell us that they don't have any of the symptoms for the coronavirus. And it's going to be sort of a step that has to be taken in the morning by families, and we apologize for that in advance, but we're trying to do everything that we can. People with the COVID-19 have a wide range of symptoms reported. They can range from mild to severe. So there'll be some information to provide us that'll help us gauge if there's a risk. So those are some of the talking points that come to mind, with health and safety. But of course, there's just so much more. We are going to be limiting outside visitors in groups, very limited access to the school during the day. And we need people's cooperation with that. So you might see us post a sign like no visitors. And that's counterintuitive. We always want our families in the schools. We want our parents in the schools. But I think I'm hoping folks can appreciate what we're trying to accomplish. Not having visitors permitted in school facilities unless it's scheduled and to enter, required by law kind of thing. And I don't know of many exceptions there. We'll be doing active screenings. of individuals and spending a lot of time on that. We'll probably do a whole broadcast just on sanitation, but you know, we'll have our principals and our teachers and our staff review guidance and be trained, and we'll be posting signage and regarding proper, you know, cleaning and hygiene and washing and sanitizing hands. And who knows, it may be closing down water fountains and providing water another way. We're buying right now thousands of dollars of PPE. We're hoping that parents will provide masks for their children, but we have to be ready if they don't, you know, if they can provide masks, you know, if they can afford that and they want to do that. So there's so much to consider.
Right. And I think as you kind of go through the checklist, there is so many things that you have to consider. So when you're, you know, you spoke earlier about looking at the broad, you know, goal is, yes, we want students back in our school buildings. We want nothing more than that. But there's a significant amount of logistics and details that have to be worked out, everything from how students are going to exit and enter buildings to how are they going to enter and exit classrooms. So a lot of time is being spent to those small details that up until this year, you know, you take for granted.
Absolutely. And that's I'm glad you mentioned that in terms of, you know, students entering the building. We're going to give more time to the arrival and dismissal process, so the instructional time will be less, unfortunately. And, you know, I always value that instructional time and really look at it as a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
We have staff that have health issues, as you can imagine, when you have 315 teachers, let's say, and many other employees. So right now we're ascertaining what are some of those health concerns that staff have and what accommodations do we need to make. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a people business. We're a human capital business. And if we can't keep our staff healthy and take the proper precautions, well, then there's no school. And we need to reassure them that they're going to be safe and we're taking the proper precautions. And we're working hard on that. So, you know, throughout our broadcast and on our website, there'll be more and more information that we'll be providing to our listeners in all the areas that we had shared with our reopening plan. You know, the reopening plan has to address certain areas, whether it's communications, health and safety, facilities, you know, just looking at facilities and what would that health plan, you know, excuse me, what would that facilities plan look like? Oh, the district's plan would have to be ranging from everything from disinfecting high touch surface areas like door handles, light switches, handrails, bottle filling stations, zinc handles, restrooms, to a computer equipment, to disinfecting wipes in all the classrooms, to changing the Univent air filters regularly, to sanitizing the bathroom much more than we had in the past throughout the day. And the New York State Education Department has the different cleaning products that we can use that are approved. The having hand sanitizers throughout the buildings. Then we have some equipment we use to help contain germs, whether it's area dividers, sneeze guards, sanitizing sprayers, and then really the list goes on and on. So we'll have a plan posted that'll talk to that. We'll have a plan that'll talk to how our buses and whether, you know, what capacity are we looking to have on a bus. You know, we'll, for example, I imagine we'd have siblings sit together on a bus. That would make sense. I imagine we'd have fewer students on a bus than we typically would like to have, less capacity. We would have to have cleaning on that bus in between runs at night. You know what, someone had asked me there, you know, there's some schools that are announcing they're going to have deep cleaning days. And someone had asked me about that yesterday. And I was sharing every day is going to be a deep cleaning day for us. We're not going to close school down to do deep cleaning because we have to do it every day. Otherwise,
absolutely.
It doesn't really make sense otherwise for us. But, well, Megan, I, you know, really appreciate you being here today. We could talk for hours on this. This is how I'd like to end it for our listeners for this broadcast. We will post our plan online. We will continue to provide updates. We'll have the weekly radio broadcast. Hopefully we could start showing photos online of our outdoor classrooms and some of the work we're doing at the different schools to put in some of these safeguards. So we look forward to continuing to give you updates. We all need to do our part as a community. If we can keep the infection rate down in our community, If we can keep the infection rate down in our region, then we can responsibly reopen school. It will not look like it did last September. It cannot, in order for us to be in the guidelines. It is not a local decision just to have all the kids come back tomorrow. It is we have to have an approved plan. It's going to require physical distancing. If the infection rate stays low and the governor allows us, we're going to open school in September, primarily with a hybrid model with some exceptions. Megan went over kindergarten, first grade, special education, maybe some other exceptions as we continue to flush this plan out. But we are one district that's committed to getting the students in, but doing it safely. Megan, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And until next time, this is David Leach, and you have been listening to Your Schools. Bye now.